mothers.
And others.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music, Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music. A chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During our series, we'll talk to people from across the industry. Artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. Your hosts are Liz.
Hello.
And Shelley. Hi, that's me. And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
Our guests for today are Stephanie Ashworth and Paul Dempsey. With Clint Hydman, they are Australian music legends as part of Something for Kate. Today, Stephanie and Paul are here to talk to us about the band's seventh album, The Modern Medieval, as well as catch us up on how it's been all going more generally. While all working parents everywhere have copped it hard during lockdown, especially those in Melbourne, these two have had an especially hard time of it, no doubt. When you're both musicians working in the same band, how do you decide who gets to tap out during bath time? Who gets to choose the lullabies? Is an excellent babysitter just part of the demands of the band's writer? And are they training their kids to be roadies? To tell us how it's all done, and maybe the trick is just to have Clint look after the kids, is that what you do? We're really excited to have them with us. Our musical mother, Stephanie, and our other, Paul, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yay! What I really love about this album is there's a real timelessness about it, if you don't mind me saying that. And by that I mean it's really wonderfully abstract and non-specific. So, I mean, lots of your stuff is, but particularly during COVID, I found that a really nice tonic, you know, because I don't want to hear about it. I want to pretend it's not existing. Now, imagine partly that's because a lot of it was done before all of this happened. But then when I have a look at some of your film clips and stuff, I see that there's a little bit of the outside world, what we could have had, still in there. So Supercomputer, the film clip, that's just a road trip, isn't it?
Basically, yeah.
That's a bit mean.
Well, we couldn't really be out there, and we couldn't even really, be anywhere in Melbourne to make a proper music video. So we actually put that together ourselves, just using all this kind of archival footage that we had shot ourselves from just years of touring all over the world. So it's made up of footage from, you know, cities all over Europe and America and Australia and Japan, I think. And I guess it was a way of getting beyond the immediate surroundings and just sort of hopefully taking people on a little journey.
Did you feel that too? Like Waste Our Breath, was that another one that was made during this time? Because that's one that's actually in an empty theatre, isn't it?
Yeah,
we were actually lucky enough to squeeze that one in between lockdowns in Melbourne. Like, it was like 2 days before Melbourne went into the second lockdown, and the director had actually had another, he had a particular town hall booked with a beautiful drape booked and put in this town hall, and then the whole suburb got locked down with the hall and the drape and all the stuff. So we had to kind of quickly pivot the word of the pandemic to the Palais Theatre, which ended up being great. But it was, you know, a very different feel from what we had imagined, and I think, you know, has this sort of eeriness to it because everybody in Melbourne knows the Palais and knows the size of it, and obviously it had been empty for months and months, and then there we were sort of in this beautiful big empty building making a whole lot of noise. But I think they were really happy to have somebody in the building.
But I think that the sight of 2,000 empty seats as well just kind of lent that sort of sense of relevance to the pandemic and you know, what has basically happened to the live music industry.
Yeah. I mean, how are you finding it, the rest of your lives aside, professionally, are you okay? Like, you've just had this, your arm's cut off. Are you all right?
Well, you can't tour, right?
Yeah, so we can't do anything. I mean, I think we're both, you know, we're really quick to think about how fortunate we are and all of the, you know, things that we have to be grateful for, given the challenges that everybody has faced this year. Like, we're always very quick to preface everything with that. But we'd also be lying if we didn't admit that, it sucks, and that our favorite thing to do, that we haven't been able to do it and we can't do it. And it's also, you know, it's a large part of a musician's livelihood is being able to go out and play. So yeah, it's been a crap year.
For sure, for sure. Has it had to, those logistics of, you know, how you juggle family life and professional life and just headspaces, like different headspaces, your own headspaces versus your headspace as a parent or as another family member, you know, as a cousin, as a friend, as a father, as a son, as a daughter, everything like that. Have you found that difficult to find some space in as well?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I'm going to say yes. I was just talking to somebody else in the biz who has two small children like we do, like you do. And, you know, I think the not knowing you couldn't go anywhere and the homeschooling and the, there's not physically any space for you. Mm. You have to go internally in here, which is quite difficult, as you know, with children because they don't really operate that way. I mean, I have to admit that Paul did the majority of the homeschooling because I realised we have a 9-year-old and I realised pretty quickly that I was not cut out for that particular activity.
If either of us was ever going to be a school teacher, it was probably me.
Yeah, right. That's interesting though, isn't it? Because that kind of, that negotiation, I mean, we kind of joke in our house that I said for better or for worse. I didn't say all the bloody time.
But I mean, Steph also, you know, isn't giving herself enough credit. We have a 9-year-old, but we also have a 5-year-old who isn't in school yet. So yes, I was sitting down with our 9-year-old all day doing school stuff, but you know, that left Steph to take care of the 5-year-old. So it was a little less regimented. It wasn't a classroom routine, but you know, she still had her hands full as well.
Yeah, and they're big enough. 5's big enough to like set fire to things, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and you should meet this kid.
Hi, I'm Kate Duncan from The Push, and you are listening to Music, Mothers and Others. Life in Melbourne has been tough. Homeschooling or even just taking care of a kindergarten age kid, which is what I've been doing here as well, has been tough. How do you manage that with being creative, or did you just put a stop on the whole creativity in terms of writing, or did you do it when the kids are asleep? Like, what does that routine for making music look like?
I mean, honestly, it kind of stopped. But
I think first we had to make the decision about whether we were going to go ahead and release this record during this period. And that was, I mean, we were in Los Angeles right at the start of the lockdown. And like literally landed from Los Angeles. I sent my mother home to Perth, and I, you know, we pulled our children out of school and kinder, and just went into a serious sort of self-imposed exile because we knew that we had been somewhere where there were a lot of cases coming or forming, and so the first decision with, you know, for us and our record company and all our management and everybody was to sort of decide, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to go ahead with our plans or are we going to alter them? Mm. And that kind of, I think, took up a fair bit of the brain space in the first few months about how are we going to adapt to this and adapting to also the idea of live streaming and, you know, online performing and all that sort of thing. And how do you do that with kids in the house and all those questions? So,
and how much of that do you want to do as well? Because you're essentially going from a situation where we were going to release an album and go on tour, you know, the usual way, to a situation where we don't know if we can put our album out, and there's sort of this expectation out there that you're going to jump on the internet and play for free every night. And you got to sort of, you know, assess that as well. What are you doing in the long term to the value of your own art if you sort of join the kind of rush to be online playing all the time? So that we didn't do much of that initially. It was actually only when Melbourne went into the second lockdown and the mood really kind of sunk, that was when I started playing online a lot more often, purely because we just felt like we wanted to give people something at that point. It was like, okay, people are just, they're stuck, they're unhappy. Let's just try and put a little escapism out there.
Was that the under pressure?
Yeah, I started just jumping on Instagram Live and kind of saying, you know, hello, Melbourne friends. You know, I know this sucks, so I'm going to play a song for you. And, you know, all my sort of concerns about what am I doing to the value of my yada yada. It was just like, oh, man, people are just down. So I just started jumping on Instagram Live myself, and then it sort of expanded to, pre-recording these little duets and editing them together so that it was a, you know, nice little thing to enjoy. And it kind of turned into a whole series of duets with friends of ours. And, you know, I'm really glad we did it. And actually, all my wariness about this thing of playing across the internet and whether that was going to feel like any real kind of connection or not was completely blown away. I actually came to really rely on there really was a feeling of connection, and it actually ended up being really good for me as well, just to feel like a performer again in some way.
Yeah. You guys did a duet, though, in different rooms?
Well, it was actually in this room. But it was just that, you know, I have made a joke that it really did take a pandemic for me to sing, like, on camera. Because I have not, like, I'm someone who has done backing vocals in the studio on our records sometimes, but I don't sing live. And, you know, this it was just funny that, I never could have foreseen that event. I think it was nice for Paul to do the duets, because some of the people that were doing the duets with him were, you know, Bernard was in New South Wales at the time, and they weren't locked down. And I think it was nice for him to feel like, oh, I'm contributing something to Melbourne. It was for Melbourne. I think some of the others were from people who were also not in Melbourne. So it was a nice outlet for them to kind of contribute something with Paul and to feel like, okay, I know you're having a really awful time and I'm going to sacrifice some time to, you know, offer this escapist kind of few minutes of escapism.
I love though too, Steph, that it's that one that you're on, because is there a better anti-love song than, you know, There Is a Light That Never Goes Out? And then when you're both there, I'm like, oh my goodness, I had a little moment for you. And, oh, they're your parts. And then I spotted your television. This is going to make me sound creepy as, isn't it? But I spotted the little poster in the background. I think that's the same. Is that the same? I don't know.
We did get a few people going, hold on, what are you in the same room?
And where are the kids during all of this? Are you like got the door shut, just going, just play, keep on playing. We're 5 minutes. Can you just not make any noise?
How many episodes of Bluey did you use to get it done, you know?
Yeah, well, we're very lucky that, you know, just the age difference, one being 9 and one being 5, our 9-year-old is a good big brother, and he gets it. He understands what we do, and he really loves feeling like he can play any part at all in what we do. And we're also very lucky that we're on two levels here. So we can go upstairs and just say, hey, just don't come upstairs for 10 minutes and don't burn the house down.
Well, we also, we're really, really bad parenting probably on my part, but I also introduced them to the Twilight series. And because I know that they're both obsessed with vampires, so I was like, okay.
There's nothing wrong with just having a TV babysitter during lockdown.
But that also only happened because they did work their way through, what was it, 100, and we counted, I think it was 144 episodes of Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah, Gilmore Girls. Yeah,
so they started watching, and we all watched it together. We started, you know, series one, episode one of the Gilmore Girls at the beginning of the first lockdown, and we watched the last episode the night before Victoria opened up again.
Wow. Steph, if you don't mind me having a minute with you too, you were my very first interview, I'm sorry to say, 20 years ago for Beautiful Sharks when I was a student, and I will always love you for being so kind to somebody who was very, very nervous and new. But there's a generation now, not just the generation you have birthed, but a generation, sadly, of children that we are teaching at uni now who are, you know, the next generation after you guys. Do you think about your musical legacy, or how you can get the next generation of, well, not just musicians, but creative artists and creative industry people into industry, and it can be with your kids or just with, you know, kids who are coming up as your colleagues in industry. Do you guys think about that and what you might, how you might shepherd them through?
It's interesting because, oh, sorry, this was directed at you.
Oh, but that's okay, because I was conveniently just thinking about answering.
I just did a full Scott Morrison.
No. I think insofar as that we really encourage our own children to explore, you know, things pretty organically, like in that, you know, we haven't forced lessons on them in terms of music lessons. We don't change our behaviour for them. I'm a firm believer in that sort of, I think it's a French, you know, parenting philosophy about when you have children, they come into your world. You can't always tailor everything in the world to specifically to them, and you've sort of got to be, you know, reasonably realistic and sort of and try not, you know, obviously it's, we try to soften the experience of what we do, and we're very selective about what we expose them to. But at the same time, the reality of what we do and about it being difficult sometimes and challenging and loud and not always cushy and comfortable. And you know, time-wise, they can see that we work really late hours. They can see that the work just keeps going and going. And you know, hopefully they've both decided not to actually be in a band. But, no, I just think that we're fairly realistic about what it is that we do. And I think we just try to give really practical examples of how they might, if they want to do what we do, of how they might do it, and that there are no tricks to it, and that you have to spend time being quite dedicated to, you know, whatever you've chosen, whether it be, you know, guitar or drums or art. So we do try to, I guess, does that kind of answer your question? In that sort of practical sense, and I think that we also try to show them that it is possible. Like you can, you know, it's possible, and it's gender wise, there is no restriction, and neither should there be.
Yeah,
ever.
And I think maybe a follow on question for the both of you is that with our show Music Mothers and Others, we're kind of like asking our guests, because they have this great perspective on being a parent and being a musician or in the music industry, what changes do you think you might suggest are needed in the music industry in order to make it a bit more of a parent-friendly or a kid-friendly space? Now, that might be a change to how live venues are run or how touring schedules work or just expectations about not talking about families or something like that. So do you have any suggestions about how we might improve the music industry to make it a bit more happier, gentler place for parents or kids?
Well, I mean, the first thing that springs to my mind is just that it would be great if licensed venues, you know, were able to accommodate the fact that sometimes you might need to bring underage kids into the venue with you. And, sure. You know, when they're obviously at an age where they can be in a backstage green room or something, you know, for a while unsupervised, or they might be with a crew member or whatever. But, you know, that would be a really obvious thing. But overall, I think...
Well, more all-ages shows generally is something we've been... we spent years trying to make happen. And there's been phases of... You know, there's been times where there's been like a whole flurry of all-ages activities for rock music. And then they'll all stop because, you know, obviously venues find it difficult with the licensing issues. That's one area that I think really needs improvement across Australia, is having dedicated funding and venues that can house regular all ages shows, and at, you know, earlier times in the day and early evening. So you've got, you know, really young kids, but then you could have your teenagers as an outlet for teenagers as well, that's safe and they can go home and it's still light, or, you know, there's all that sort of thing.
And I think that also goes back to your previous question about how do you prepare the next generation to get into these industries. They have to be able to attend, you know, at a young age if they're going to get excited by it and want to know more about it. And, you know, so if you can, you know, make it accessible to them, then that's really how you're going to drive the interest.
And not just at that really big arena, Taylor Swift level of things. I think the reality of a smaller scale event can be a lot more educational for younger kids who are interested, but you know, the big arena experience is so removed.
Mm.
So it'll be really nice for kids, you know. I mean, we grew up going to all ages shows, you know, yeah. where you saw the nuts and bolts of things a little bit more. And sure. I think it's really
and it looked possible.
Well, it's possible. It's you know, it's not like, oh, I'll never be able to do this. It's actually, you know what? If you learn your instrument and you love writing songs and this is what you want to do, you can do this.
Do you think these kind of online things are that stopgap? You know what I mean? Because there's no restriction.
Yeah, I mean, I think any level of accessibility, even if it's just a direct, being able to have a direct conversation or ask a question directly to a performer or whatever, anything that makes it appear possible and accessible is going to motivate those youngsters. And like Steph said, as a kid, if I had only been able to see international acts in arenas, then that would have just been like, well, you know, how do you, you can never do that. But the fact that I was able to go to the Corner Hotel when I was 15 years old and see Magic Dirt, I mean, that was like, oh, people actually do this.
Can we ask you just one more question, if that's okay, one that we ask everybody? It's to finish the sentence the kids and I are listening to. Now, I know you mentioned that you don't try and foster, put things onto your kids to listen to, but is it, if hypothetically you did, and to give you a bit of an insight to what's happening in my house at the moment, because the three-year-old is maraca heavy, we're into Peter Allen at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything that you guys are listening to with your kids that you want to share with us?
I actually have to qualify that. We do make them listen to stuff.
Good.
We don't make them have lessons, but we do insist that they listen to, I mean, a lot of David Bowie.
Yes.
A lot of Frank Sinatra.
Good.
My gosh.
I mean, our five-year-old daughter's favourite band at the moment is probably Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats. Because I just put that on so much and she just really was drawn to it. And, you know, I mean, they're little kids, you know. When I wear an Iron Maiden T-shirt with that artwork on it, they're just like, what is that? So then you play them Iron Maiden and they're like, this is amazing. But they've also been, like, for the last 2 weeks straight, they want to hear You Can Call Me Al just over and over and over and over as loud as possible. And then it might be broken up with, you know, a little Bowie or they don't mind Slayer either.
Yeah, they like a bit of metal. Our son just entered the school talent contest and did his own version of Elton John, I'm Still Standing. You know, it's fairly diverse and I think that's really good. And, you know, I'll always play a bit of Kate Bush, try to get them into a little bit of you know, Wuthering Heights. I think it's important to have the broad spectrum of, you know, from the Smiths to Kate Bush to The Cure to, you know.
I love Tori Amos too.
That's parenting done right.
Hi, I'm Paul.
I'm Steph.
We're from Something for Kate.
And you're listening to Music Mothers and Others.
Hey, Something for Kate. I want to know, do your kids know your music? I mean, I don't know if you actually play them your songs at home, but if you do, do they listen and go, hey, look, this is Mummy playing bass right now. I can tell it's her. I can hear it's her.
Yeah, I mean, they do, because we're sometimes, you know, listening to mixes or, you know, in the lockdown we've been having to listen to our own album a bit, which we don't normally do, but just to approve mixes and all those sorts of technical things. And they do, they get, you know, they get favourites on the most recent record. As each single came out, they you know, really get into it. They really go through the journey with us. And, in fact, my son was listening to one of our singles yesterday and he said, oh, Mum, I think I can hear the bass now. I was like, well, that's good.
The funniest thing is when you sort of catch them, they've, like, taken the iPad into their room or something and gotten on Spotify and they're listening to us. And it's like they... You know, they don't want to. They just want to listen to it without us knowing that they're listening to it or whatever. So that's kind of cute. And that, like, they do know a lot of the lyrics and stuff just from hearing it. So you catch them singing songs as well. It's pretty funny.
That's awesome. You're so embarrassing, Mum. So embarrassing, Dad. You're the worst.
Yeah.
What's the one that they can just hear the bass on?
Oh, it was the last, not this single. The last single was called "Waste Our Breath."
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And yeah. It's a very bass heavy song, and he was just sitting there sort of going, I think I can really hear you, Mum. I think you're doing this and you're doing this. Is that right?
Another Music Mothers and Others. Thanks so much to our two guests, Paul Dempsey and Stephanie Ashworth from Something for Kate. Music Mothers and Others is a show written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER on 107.3 FM, and we are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual services, such as Apple and Spotify, or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. We'd love you to leave a review. It would make it easier for other people to find us. Feel like getting in touch? Want to know who our next guests are? Visit us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a message. See you next time.